Hello and welcome to Ropescast, the independent voice of the Middle East. I'm Ibrahim Abu Ahmad.
And I'm Ksenia Svetlova. ROPES stands for the Regional Organization for Peace, Economics and Security. We laid the groundwork for a post-conflict Middle East by connecting forward-thinking Israeli and Palestinian emerging leaders with like-minded peers across the region. If you are looking for more information on ROPES, please visit our website, ropes.org. Our very special guest today is Alon Lee Green, the founding national director of Standing Together, Omdim Beyachad, or Nachef Maan, a progressive grassroots movement in Israel established in the winter of 2015, which mobilizes people around issues of peace, equality, and social justice.
Hello, Alon, and welcome to Ropescast. Please, first, can you please describe to our listeners to the work of your organization, where Jews and Arabs work side by side? And how did this horrendous attack on October 7th affect you and your organization as a whole?
Hi, Ksenia. Hi, Ibrahim. Sure. So Standing Together is a Jewish-Arab grassroots movement that in, you know, normal days operates around the issues of peace and equality and social justice. We try to bring together people from the Jewish and the Arab communities in Israel to work together to try and, you know, bridge the gaps on one side and envision together a shared future, a future where the reality is something that works for, you know, both the people in this country and not for a small minority. But since we're not in normal days, and since October 7th, we are all suffering from horrific events and terrible reality. We are operating right now in Standing Together in an emergency capacity to try and save, and I'm not being dramatic, save the Israeli society from more violence and from a new front, a new violent front that can erupt every second between Jews and Arabs in our society, in the streets of Israel, in the mixed cities. We've seen a lot of efforts from extremists in Israel to try and evoke and to try and spark up a new front. We've seen attempts from the right wing in Israel to portray the entire Arab society in Israel as traitors, as people that are siding with Hamas, as people that are the enemy from within. And what we're trying to do is to lower the tensions in the Israeli streets and to de-escalate, just to de-escalate and to try and say the very simple truth. We are all in this together. We are suffering together. We are in this trauma together. We are in this fear together. And in order to survive this moment, we need to also work together, Jews and Arabs, to save our society, to protect ourselves.
Alon, you know, I follow you on Twitter, sorry, X. I still didn't, I'm still not used to that. And I could not notice the unbelievable amount of hatred that is expressed right now towards you and your partners at Standing Together. By the way, I see that it comes sometimes from Jews, sometimes from Arabs. It seems that everybody is mad at you. How do you cope with this? mentally, you know, so how do you make yourself, detach yourself from the social networks, not to read, you know, all of this? What do you do?
Honestly, it's tough. It is super unpleasant personally to a few of our leaders that are in the spotlight at the moment and they're getting a lot of heat. Yes, including myself. We're getting the heat from Palestinian nationalists and Jewish nationalists. People on the right wing on both sides don't really like our message, to be honest. And we've suffered a lot of attacks that some of them even got to be threats. I can say here, it's not something we like to talk about, but here I can say that we had to go to the police even on a few occasions. And it makes us angry that people describe us as traitors. We believe that our message is the most patriotic message a person can have at the moment. the message of we are all citizens of this country. We are all the owners together of this state. There is no difference between the suffering of a Palestinian family in the south of Israel, in Rahat, for example, that lost their child because of the terror of Hamas, than the suffer of someone from Sderot that is Jewish that lost their child to the terror of Hamas. We are all afraid at this moment. And I think this is the thing that controls the Israeli society the most at the moment. We are just afraid together. And we're all feeling those feelings together. And it makes us so angry that we need to even explain ourselves as people that doing it from the care to our society, from the love to our people. And what we try to do is to shield ourselves from these attacks and to remind each other that it's a tough moment. It's a moment where the blood just boils, and a lot of people are turning into the easy solution for that, which is hatred or it's revenge or it's anger. And we understand those feelings. We understand those feelings because we feel them ourselves. But in this moment, we need to also act responsibly. And acting responsibly is reminding people that the Arabs are not the enemy, that also in the other side, there are innocent people, that we are all victims of this reality. And yes, we need to defeat the extremists that are putting all of us in this terrible jail.
Just would like to hear from you an example of some of the things that you said that you're doing, some of the actions to de-escalate and to calm down the situation inside Israel. Can you give us an example or two of some of the initiatives that you guys are doing right now to de-escalate the situation internally?
One of our two main initiatives is what we call Jewish Arab Solidarity Guards. We have them all across the country, especially in the mixed cities, in every mixed city in Israel. It can be Akko and Lod and Ramle and Haifa and Yafo and Tel Aviv. Be'er Sheva is a mixed city. Carmiel is also a mixed city, even though they're not conceived like that. In all of the mixed cities and mixed regions in Israel, we have a Jewish Arab Solidarity Guard, which operates in two ways. One is Jewish Arab Solidarity activities, donating toys to the people that got hurt, opening our homes to host people that lost their homes, going to hospitals and visiting the injured people and the Jewish and Arab doctors and nurses. We clean bomb shelters together. You know, the last time a person in Haifa had to go to a bomb shelter was roughly 20 years ago. And since then, they've been locked. Imagine how dirty and disgusting they are. So Jewish Arab groups in Haifa are going together in their neighborhoods to open up the bomb shelters, cleaning it, putting bottles of water, and putting then signs, directing signs in Arabic and in Hebrew that is directing to the bomb shelter. This is the solidarity work that we're doing. And the aim of it is to say, we're doing things together. We exist here together. We're suffering together, but we also stand in solidarity with each other. The other part of what the Jewish Arab Solidarity Guards are doing is monitoring calls for violence and tension. So we train our activists there to go into the groups in Facebook of the neighborhood or of the city, to the WhatsApp and Telegram groups. You have no idea what amount of disinformation is being sent there. For example, on Saturday, people spread it against Humus Abu Shaker in Haifa, one of the most famous institutions of the Arab.
Wonderful place.
A very tasty place. One of the most famous institutions, culinary institute in Haifa of Arab, that he's supporting Hamas. I mean, not only that he doesn't support Hamas, he even gives food to the soldiers, okay? He donates this to the soldiers. And it started to spread so quickly that people started to organize to come to a demonstration against this hummus place. And some people even said, we need to torch it in fire tonight. So we organized a group of Jewish Arab people to just arrive immediately there, to sit at the place, to talk to the owner of the place, which was, of course, very frightened. And he didn't understand how did it happen to him, because he has nothing to do with Hamas or terrorism. And that happens a lot in every city right now. The disinformation is crazy. On Netanya,
So this is where coming here exactly at that, Alon, because we record this episode just a few days after these riots that broke near the dorms of the Arab students in Netanya, when angry mob tried to storm the building. You were live tweeting at this moment. Please walk us through this incident and explain what really happened there. And did you speak to the Arab students who were inside? Who were your sources?
Yeah, so also in Netanya, it's another example happening, by the way, as we speak, in Tzfat, which is another hotspot of Arab students that are living in a Jewish city. And we heard during the day that there is a demonstration being organized for the time of the evening against the Arab students in the Netanya college that are living there in the dorms. And then the amount of people that came was unbelievable. Hundreds.
What was the reason for the demonstration? Can you walk us through how did it start? How did the flame started burning?
So the how would you say Agarina Torani? The religious
nuclear.
The religious core.
The religious core.
The religious core group of Netanya, which is an ideological right-wing group that operates in cities, in mixed cities, a lot of the times, to try and create a religious right-wing community in those cities. They spread it that a group of Arab students interfered and really disturbed the prayers of the Jewish people in the synagogue next to the Netanya College. They even claimed that two of them threw eggs on the Jewish prayers, people that prayed there. And that was the main information that was spreaded around and circulated in a lot of groups. Then in the evening, hundreds of protesters, angry mob, came and started to storm on the building, trying to break in, while 50 students, Arab students, were hiding inside. We had we have connection with a few that are active in our movement. Even, and I want to say it very clearly, even if two or four students put loud music on Saturday while people were praying, which is a very unnice thing to do, even if they threw eggs on them, which I don't personally know, but I believe it is possible. I want to say that I believe it is possible that two or four did this thing. It does not justify 500 people coming there, chanting death to all Arabs, trying to break inside and hunt Arab students. And I don't know what would happen if they would succeed. And that was very scary. We were on the line with the mayor of Netanya, with some parliament members, with the police. We were trying to organize buses to them to be rescued from the scene. And even we tried to organize people that said that they're okay with opening their houses to let them sleep there at the night. And luckily, it ended without anyone getting hurt. But honestly, no one even got arrested. No one was summoned to be investigated on how you organize something like this. And we're talking about a moment where an Arab citizen of Israel can like a post on Instagram and can be summoned to the police to get, you know, to get into an investigation. And it's a very scary moment.
I just have to reflect on the last sentence that you had, Alon, you know. So when somebody posts support for the Hamas in an Instagram post, what do you suppose, what should happen next? Because, you know, if, frankly, saying, you know, that support for the terrorist organization while Israel is at war, it's really not a reasonable thing, you know, to happen, you know. So then summoning to the police, I think that, you know, quite reasonable. To take place.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, if you support murdering kids and women and supporting the horrific crimes against humanity of Hamas, I don't pity you. I'm sorry. And we monitored these cases and we found 8 in total, and the police really summoned those people to get investigated. Most of them were released to their homes because they found nothing was criminal, and there's not a law against it. But the full picture of the reality right now is that thousands of Arab citizens of Israel are being fired from their work, being kicked off their universities or colleges. And we opened a hotline of Standing Together where people can call and try to get legal aid, emotional aid. And we have hundreds of people that are calling us a day just because they followed a Facebook page named News of Palestine. Just because 5 years ago, someone had, you know, you can see it now in the news, it's happening now. A school teacher was taken by 10 police officers from a school because 5 years ago she posted a picture of her with a Palestinian scarf with the colors of the Palestinian flag. Is this a reason to take you to a police investigation and to be brought by 10 police officers? You're not a terrorist. You're not a criminal.
I'll just want to remind to our listeners that more than one time the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, had hosted the chairman of the Palestinian Authority at his residence in Jerusalem, and there was a Palestinian flag flying high. For the same very flag, somebody today from Jerusalem or from other town can be taken to investigation, or even worse than that.
Exactly. So I think we are facing a phenomenon that cannot be described otherwise but criminalizing being Palestinian in Israel and identifying as Palestinian. So there is 20% of our society in Israel, of the citizens of Israel, that are not Jewish. They are Arab, they're Palestinian, depends on the person, how they define themselves. But a lot of those people are defining themselves as part of the larger Arab people that is sitting on this land, is living on this land, which is the Palestinian people. And when you're doing so right now, you're being criminalized, you lose your job, you're being kicked off of your university. And not only that, even if you're not defining yourself as Palestinian and you're just trying to survive as a minority in Israel, we're seeing a phenomenon of closing construction sites in Israel just because the workers there are Arab. And we're seeing mayors in Israel that are, without any shame, saying that they will not open the construction site in the entire city of Givatayim, for example, because the workers there are Arab. And who is taking responsibility for their salaries? No one. Who is taking responsibility for a citizen of Israel that is losing their job just because of their identity? No one. And it's a horrific phenomenon. And I'm really afraid that we're losing our humanity in this moment, and we're losing the you know, the grounds of surviving as a society.
You know, with everything that you mentioned and all the challenges that are facing us, especially with all these things that are happening in the war, if we look, you know, space out of this particular clash, and we look at in general about Arab-Jewish relations, you know, it was never something that was just easy. You know, we have different cultures, different identities, different perspectives, but relations exist, and you know, you guys are champions of that. But what do you think will happen in the future? What will happen now and in our future in relations between Arabs and Jews in Israel? How will we overcome this? How can we restore trust? You know, I walked the other day in the park and people gave me looks. It wasn't looks of hate. It was more of fear, I would say, from what I saw. And it's very uncomfortable. How do we change that in the future?
It's very uncomfortable, to say the least. You're right.
Say the least.
I would say that the key understanding, the key thing here is to understand that we are afraid and to acknowledge the fear, to accept it, to not make it something racist, for example. I'm also not telling a Jewish family that goes on the bus right now, seeing an Arab person and being afraid. I'm not telling them they're racist. I understand their fear. But I also understand the fear of an Arab citizen of Israel walking in the park and being a bit afraid, exposed, afraid, or going on the bus and being afraid to answer their mom on Arabic, because we know what can happen. And if we will understand that fear exists, but we're not alone in our fear in our Jewish society, or in Arab society, there is a key understanding there that we can try and you know, overcome together this fear, because everyone is afraid right now. Everyone is suspicious. Everyone is terrorized by this moment, and we're all together not able to imagine overcoming it. And honestly, I don't have a simple answer of how to, you know, a plan of how to overcome it, but I do know one thing for sure, and it's no one is going anywhere. Millions of Jewish people will remain on this land, and millions of Arabs and Palestinians will remain on this land. And if we understand that's a fact, and only delusional people deny or ignore this fact, so we need to work with this fact. And we need to come to a place where we understand that this moment is not the end of times, and it's not the end of history. And we need answers, and we need to work with answers right now on regards to Gaza, on regards to the West Bank, and also on regards to the Israeli society that is combined by Jews and Arabs together. And this is the only way to move forward. And it's kind of something I would also tell my prime minister, our prime minister. There are life on this place. There are lives on this place. Talk to us about how to keep those lives, how to keep living here, not about how much death and destruction you want to create, because that's obvious. But if we will not think of how we continue to live here, we'll just be, you know, on the problem side, not on the solution side.
I want to ask you a very difficult question. Not that there are easy questions in this regard. But, you know, when we are talking about trying to live together, trying to save whatever, you know, sanity that we still have. Because, again, we are looking at what happened since October 7th. And we do see that, you know, that despite this doomsday scenarios, at least for now, and again, you know, I'm saying touch wood, but the situation is relatively quiet. But how do we eliminate the spoilers? You know, so I'm talking about, you know, I'm zooming out. Let's suppose that there is a different government in Israel. Let's suppose that there is no Hamas regime in Gaza. But there will always be spoilers that will jeopardize any progress. And of course, you know, I recall the Oslo Accords, and Hamas in this regard is very important, you know, of course, because they derailed the process from the Palestinian side. And there were people who were demonstrating against Oslo in the very days when it was signed, and they derailed, you know, this process from the Jewish side. What can you do? How you can, you know, receive this immunity from the malign elements who want for war to continue forever?
Wow, it is a tough question.
I promised you.
Yes. I think we're talking about politics eventually. Yes. Yes, there's the course of war. Yes, there's the tactics and the strategy between the two people. But eventually we're talking about internal politics in each of the societies. And I think one of the main questions in politics is who gets to isolate who. And unfortunately, the extremists on both sides manage to isolate the moderates and manage to isolate the people that are thinking in terms of solutions. And they are stuck on continuing the problem because they are feeding from the problem. We need to understand, and I don't want to say it in, you know, I don't want to say it in a way that I'm trying to portray someone as just evil, but Prime Minister Netanyahu, the Minister Ben-Gvir, Smotrich, and on the other side, the extremists on the other side, that I don't want to say them in the same sentence right now because it's too delicate, but those people are being, they are really feeding from violence. They are feeding from fear. They're trying to build their political survival on those things. And we need to understand that that our mission is to isolate them with also feelings, feelings of a mother in Israel that is afraid to send her son or daughter to storm into Gaza, a feeling of a person, a Jewish person that is going in the street in Jerusalem and is afraid to get stabbed, like we saw today in Jerusalem by a Palestinian, a feeling of a Palestinian in Gaza fearing to get bombed by an Israeli airplane, or in Jenin, fearing to be attacked by an Israeli soldier. If we try to bring all these into one equation, there is a huge majority in both societies that is a moderate majority that wants to live quietly and to be out of any trouble. Problem is that, you know, the people in power right now are representing minorities with a lot of power. The settler minority in Israel is a very powerful minority. They are in power right now, even though they don't represent the numbers of the majority in Israel, because they represent roughly 7% of the Israeli society. How do we isolate them? That's the big question, but that's also the mission we have. And I think all those also the Palestinians have in their own society.
And Alon, if we, you know, looking at all of this and trying to understand, you know, trying to track back to everything that happened to the point where we are today, I guess my question, where did we fail? You know, obviously we had these extremists that try to push the narrative toward a narrative of hate, but where did we go wrong? How were we not able to take these emotions to this place in the past? Why did that not work?
You mean where did we go wrong apart from building a sukkah in Hawara?
Basically.
When there's no peace, war comes. And when you refuse systematically to try and achieve peace, you put yourself in an unpatriotic position where you endanger your own people. And I think our government did everything they can to refuse to even meet with President Abbas in the Palestinian Authority since 2014. But during these years, they did everything they can to threaten Hamas, to bring Hamas into the position of real power, and to even threaten Hamas in the West Bank, where they don't have the control over the Palestinian Authority over there. So it was a strategy. It was a real strategy of avoiding any progress to try and dismantle the possibility of a Palestinian state. And if we point on this policy, on this strategy, we understand that this strategy actually put millions of Israeli lives in danger physically, just like, you know, on real reality, it put us in danger. And I think that the easiness of living your life in Israel, sitting in a coffee with your friends in Ra'anana, or in even Ashdod, even in Be'er Sheva, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, in Jerusalem, imagining that the Palestinian problem does not exist, it is too damn easy. But then it explodes in our face, in our faces. And I think that combined, the strategy of the government and the bubble that it's too easy to live with and live in the Israeli society, is a very dangerous, it's a very dangerous combination. And I think we need to remember after this moment, and the war will end, and we need to remember after this moment that this conception of managing the conflict, of managing the military control over millions of people, exploded. It does not exist anymore. We need to find a solution. Otherwise, we'll keep dying.
In this regard, Alon, I have to ask you about the role of the young people. The Palestinian society is obviously very, very young, and so is also Israeli society, much younger than in the West. And, you know, in this regard, we are looking at, 88, almost a old Palestinian leader, Abu Mazen, and you're looking at Netanyahu, who is, 74 already. The rest of the gang, and, you know, the same faces, the same names that are repeating time after time, year after year. And these are obviously people who failed miserably in absolutely everything. What do young leaders need to do to shape a different future for us here in Israel? And Alon, you're a very young person by yourself, although you have already quite a lot of experience. I know that you were also an advisor in the Knesset, pretty much, I think, at the same time when I was a member of Knesset. Yes. How do you feel about it? You know, what many young people feel that they don't have the power that they don't have this leverage to change anything, you know, so they just give up. What is your message to them?
You know, I wrote about it just the other day. The right wing right now tries to shape a narrative that blames the left wing, blames, you know, Prime Minister Rabin even for the situation we're in today. And they say Oslo Accords was the first beginning of this Holocaust that the Jewish people are going through again right now. And I actually wrote, I remember Oslo. I'm old enough, I'm 35, to remember Oslo as a young kid in the second grade. I remember how we were dressed in white and came to school, and it was a celebrative and festive and hopeful day, as well as the day of signing the peace agreement with Jordan. It was a time of hope. It was a time where kids knew that there is a leadership that is working somehow, not perfectly, but is working on creating peace and achieving our society. But I'm the last generation that remembers this. I'm the last generation that experiences. Generations after me, and another one, and another one, and another one, have been grown up in Israel and in Palestine, not remembering even what it is to even see the leaders meet. I'm not talking about signing a peace agreement, but even meet, negotiate, talk about it. I think in the Palestinian society, it's even worse when you think about a child growing up in Gaza for the last 17 years, never leaving Gaza once, never seeing the world, never experiencing an open society, never experiencing anything else but living under the fear and horror, one in one hand from Israel and the other hand from Hamas. And this is a very fertile soil for terrorism. It's a very fertile soil for hatred. And I think also in the Israeli society, when we look at the fact that opposite to the other societies in the world where young people are turning to the left, and it's a fact, actually, it's an interesting fact, but they're turning into the left wing. In Israel, the young people are turning to the right wing just because of that. They lack hope. We lack a prospect in the Israeli society. How can we raise children in this country? How can we buy an apartment in this country? How can we imagine that we live in prosperity in this country? It's all over you look. You just have a government that promises you a status quo that is shitty, that is terrible. And there's no hope in any layer of our existence. And it's really, really bad.
You know, you took me back to my second, third grade and beginning of the 2000s. That we had with a sister school, an Arab school, with a Jewish school, and they brought us all together. And there was all this feeling of optimism that, you know, things are changing. But then we were the last generation that experienced something like that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, we also mentioned how the left is being, or at least the extreme right wing is trying to blame the left for everything that's happening right now. So I guess my question is, what do you think the future of the left wing in Israel will be? What will happen to the people who were peacemakers, who are trying to push for a two-state solution? I mean, you know, you can either lose hope or you can think that this is now or never. Where do you see, talking to people, how do you see the mood is right now in the peace camp?
You know, it's kind of funny because you said that we both said that we're being accused now as the left for this situation. It's kind of it's a funny psychological phenomenon where the right wing is in power for so many years, but it still blames others for what's going on. It's an amazing. It's also something we see in the society, which is interesting. That even though when you do a big zoom out, Israel is the big force. Israel is the stronger power in the region. Israel is. I will risk and say Israel is also the one that is controlling millions of people that do not have Israeli citizenship, but are controlled by the Israeli army. But still, we have the feeling of being the victims so strongly. And I think it is something we need to work with if we want to imagine a time where we can convince masses of people here in Israel as the left. We need to work with this feeling of happiness, of feeling unsatisfied, of feeling that we're being fucked by someone else. And yes, we are being fucked by someone else. I'm sorry if I'm not saying a word we can say.
We'll be it.
Okay. But yes, the people that are in power are leading us into a doomed situation. And yes, the forces that are having the ability to maneuver their reality are putting families in danger. The people in the Gaza surrounding Otef Gaza, the Jewish villages around kibbutzim around Gaza, they warned the government for years that they are afraid, that they are unsafe, that they feel that the solutions of the government are not solutions at all. They're just, you know, dwelling from one time to the other, doing another war after a war, thinking this time it will do something. And they said, we're not satisfied. We cannot deal with this. And they were ignored. And I think we need to establish a political camp in Israel that is not working for a solution because we pity the Palestinians. We also have, you know, emotions of solidarity with the Palestinians. But first of all, we're working for our self-interest of being secure in our own country. And that means doing peace, because there will not be security without achieving an Israeli-Palestinian peace agreement. And it's a self-interest. It's not out of solidarity.
Thank you very much, Alon, for these words of inspiration in such a difficult time when the word hope seems almost senseless. We cannot even forget. We cannot even right now imagine, you know, what is hope for us. But talking to people like you, doing such an important work, Arabs and Jews together against all odds, this is really commendable. It was our honor to speak to you, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. As an Arab, I would like to tell you thank you for all your hard work and your bravery. And you talked about a party in the government. Well, we'll be waiting for you there, my friend.
Wow. That's a high thing to say. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Ropescast, the independent voice of the Middle East. Our guest today was Alon Lee Green, a founding regional director of Standing Together on Dim Yachad Naqif Ma'an, an Israeli NGO that brings together Arabs and Jews to fight for social justice and peace.
We hope you enjoyed The Ropescast. Our podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all quality podcast platforms. We are very grateful to all our listeners in the Middle East, Europe, the US, and other parts of the world. You can support our work by small donation. More details on our website, ropes.org. Please follow ropes.org on social networks to find out more about our work with the emerging leaders of the Middle East.
I'm Ibrahim Abu Ahmed.
And I'm Ksenia Svetlova.
Shalom.
And salam.